I was taken out from Auschwitz on the death march. Outside was minus 23 degrees, cold. We were just in our striped suits, and we marched for about 2.5 days. And anybody who couldn't walk was shot in the back of the head, and the bodies were just thrown on the side of the road. And we, after we stopped in a small town, we were put onto goods wagons and taken to Buchenwald.
So you're going to take us through Auschwitz, through the eyes of a survivor. Let's go back to when you first arrived here. How old were you, and what was your first memory of arriving at Auschwitz-Birkenau?
I came here with 185 children from the orphanage, from the Lodz ghetto. We told to go, get off the train, and we were about 100 people on a train, on a goods wagons. And we had to stand up, we couldn't even sit down, we were so crowded. And then we arrived here by train in Birkenau, and they told the children to, you know, the adults to get off the train, men and boys on one side, women and children on the other side. And then there was a selection.
Can you take us on the site to where the trains came in?
Yes.
Avital, you're the 17-year-old granddaughter of this extraordinary man, and he's going to explain Auschwitz to you, and very kindly you're going to allow us to listen in. What are you preparing yourself now as we're at the gates?
I'm preparing to get a bit emotional. I don't really know what exactly to expect. I know what happened here, but I've never seen it with my own eyes.
And that's what's going to happen. Mr. Hirsch, lead on.
Over there on the left was the building where we came in with the train. The train went all the way to the left, and that it stopped. And then I've noticed three high-ranking SS officers, and also SS men with guns standing around. And I had the experience from my first camp, never be with children or elderly people. If the German didn't need you, they used to kill you up very quickly. So I watched, and all the children from the orphanage and with older men and so on, and children always sent to the left side, and I knew that's the wrong place to be. And so actually what actually happened, a young mother, she had a baby on her arms, and they wanted the mother, they didn't want the child, they tried to get the child out of her arms. She started screaming, and the SS men run towards her, because when even they're going to kill you, they want everything to work right on the selection. And that's when I made my move, and I went over to the right side, because I've noticed fitter men and women are picked to the right-hand side.
So that decision, when that commotion was going on with that mother, your decision to nip into that, that saved your life?
Yes, yes. Me and another boy walked across to the other side. We marched on, and we came to a brick building. And there, as I said, they told us to get undressed. We went into a place where they shaved our heads off. And then...
And they did that to you? They shaved your hair?
Oh, yes. And then they told us to go into the next room with a shower room. That's the first, only shower I had in six and a half months. And then from the shower room, we dried ourselves. And we next room, we got our stripe uniforms. And I also got my number on my left arm, and it's B7608.
And you're rolling up your sleeve now in the freezing cold, so I'm going to see the... And how did they apply that? Oh, my God. How did they apply... Dear God.
This was my name, and that was my... whenever they wanted me, they called me by the number. B7608.
And And that's still clearly legible all these years on?
Yes, all these years.
How did they apply that?
They put some holes in first with a wooden pen, and they made the holes, and then they poured some ink on, and the ink went in, and then we washed, eventually, a day later, we washed the ink off. And
how much did that hurt?
It hurt when they did it, yes, sure. And this number, that's a, I had a number here, and a number of my trousers, and that's my number.
And the people who were doing this to you, were they harsh towards you?
They were prisoners. The things would, the people that...
So it's fellow prisoners.
Yes, fellow prisoners, yes. And that's the only time when they wanted you for anything. That was, they called you out by the number, that's it. You were only known by a number.
Well, we seem to be arriving. We can see the rail lines now, and indeed a carriage. I'm guessing this is where the trains ended and you were all unloaded. Is that right, Mr. Hirsch?
Yes. Yes, we were all unloaded here. The wagons, you see, about 100 people were on a wagon.
And what's roughly the dimensions of that wagon for my listeners? It's about...
1, 2, 3, 4, 6, about 7 metres.
Yeah.
About 7 metres. By about 2.5 metres.
And you arrived on one of these?
Yes. We had to stand up. We were 100 people, and then you couldn't sit down. And people were fainting, and there was no toilet. They put a bit of a curtain round with a bucket. And
how many guards? Do you know how many guards there were?
There were 3 cordons of guards. The towers, what you see, then there was another cordon on foot and another cordon on foot. 3 cordons of thing. But Auschwitz was about 30 kilometres big.
And where we're standing now, this is effectively where it was chosen whether you'd live or die.
Yes.
When you close your eyes, can you see that again in your
mind? Oh, yes, very much so. Very much so. It's a thing I'll never forget. It's a terrible...
You can hear the sound.
Oh, all sorts of different things.
And those that they took down, did they know they were going to die?
No. Nobody knew. They just said, you're going to have a shower. Before you're going to the barracks, you're going to get a shower. And that's how it happened. Here stood the 3 high-ranking officers, which did the selections. They showed you left, or they showed you right.
Where are you pointing to now, Mr. Hirsch? You're pointing right to...
To a gate, and this was the right side. If you got on this side, you had the chance to live. To the left here, you went to the right... The same barracks still stands here as it was in those days. Here they showed you to the left, so you, mostly young people, elderly people and children and so on, and they just pointed their finger and you went left. And then people walked on this road here to the right.
And where does that road take them?
Down to the gas chamber and crematorium.
Is that where we're going?
Yes. You see an odd guard. They didn't push him at all. They just let him walk. And they never tried to force him to walk faster or anything. When they were on this road here, then they were definitely going to their death. And they just allowed them to crawl along as it went.
And was it all day, 7 days a week?
Yes, it never stopped because the trains arrived all the time.
But even in the night they would do it?
They were arriving at night, but they didn't select at night, just during the day. Daylight they used to select them.
So they just keep them in the trucks until the next morning?
Correct, yeah. They came from Greece, from Italy, from Belgium, from Holland, from Poland, Poland had 3.5 million Jews before the war. And I would say about, 50,000 survived, something, or 60,000 maybe survived out of 3.5 million.
And it's fairly cold at the moment with snow on the ground, but it must have been incredibly cold here. Oh,
terrible, terrible. The snow was heavy. And on the right-hand side, that's where actually the, I think, our camp was. It's completely different because they fenced off there and they don't let anybody into the other place.
So before we go to where the selection took place, Mr. Hirsch, we seem to have come to a set of barracks which was like the penal unit or the punishment unit. Yes.
Well, they used to bring you here for any punishment, and from here they used to send you to the gas chambers and to crematorium.
Where were the gas chambers from where we are now?
We go up to the 10 left, and we're going to it.
All right, let's move on. What was this, Mr. Hirsch?
This was the changing room, and from here, men, women and children together had to undress and said, sorry, we are very busy and we can't separate you. Now, 2,000 people had to get undressed here. They had benches, both sides, and also they had hangers. And they said, make a mark where you're hanging your clothes, because when you come back, and then there was a door there, and the people went, we can't separate you because we're very, very busy. You have a shower, and then you come out and get all your goods back. And then they went in there. They were gassed.
So where a lot of that brick has fallen, that was the door they went through for the last time ever.
Yes. Yep. And then the Sonderkommando used to burn the bodies into about six ovens.
And what happened to all the clothes and the things that they'd left on their pegs?
Everything was taken down by the Sonderkommando, which were the Jewish people, and it was sorted out. Anybody who had some money or gold or whatever it is was taken out for the German war effort, and the rest was sorted out and sent to Germany.
In the movies, you see that they would sometimes pull teeth, gold teeth. Yeah. Was that just Hollywood, or did that happen?
No, it did happen, because a lot of people before the war had gold teeth and fillings.
So where would they see their teeth? Would they do that here or back where they first arrived? Where would they get the teeth as they went through?
In dentists. I mean, the dentists used to.
But if they were about to exterminate people, was it as they came through here, or they waited until later?
No. After they were dead. After they were gassed. No. After they were gassed, they pulled the teeth out and. Yeah. The Sonderkommando had to do that, which were about 30 people in each crematorium.
In a way, the Sonderkommando were worse than the Germans.
Well, what option did they have? They had no option. They had to do, they were guarded by a lot of SS men to do the job, and they had to pull out the teeth, if it had golden teeth, and they had to pull out the teeth, and then they put the bodies into the crematorium. Over there, these were towers all the way around, these big ones.
And what was in the towers? What would you see in there?
A man with a machine gun. Every tower had a machine gun. The fence was electrified night time, not daytime.
Did you ever see anyone try and get over the fence?
No. But I've seen people hanging on the fence. They had enough. They went up to the fence and electrocuted themselves.
They knew that they were killed.
Oh, yes, yes.
They just couldn't take it.
Yeah, no.
How common was that?
Quite common. Especially in the morning when we went to the bathroom. After coming out from the bathroom, people used to have enough and walked up to the fence and electrocuted themselves.
I mean, this is uncomfortable enough in shoes to walk on. It must have been continually painful.
Yes, it was. Yeah, very, very painful. But what option did we have? We had no option.
Part of the camp is closed today in preparation for the service.
Yes.
So how did you get us in?
I had a chat with the guard and I told him that I was here. And
so you're one of the few who got out of Auschwitz and you've just managed to get us back in?
Correct, yeah. Yeah. Yes, I
am. It is truly chilling because we are so alone. There are no other humans for, well, kilometres around.
Yes, it's a very easy, very eerie situation here. And here we see the photographs of the people which were waiting to be actually gassed and burned.
Now, these are particularly hideous photographs. What are we seeing here, Mr. Hirsch?
These are photographs, the only remaining pictures of Auschwitz actually to have been taken clandestinely by prisoners. One shows Jewish women being driven naked to the gas chambers and crematorium, where they were murdered. Other two show the bodies of the people to have been gassed, being burned in the open next to the crematorium 5. And this you can see, women undressed and running into the fire. And here are the bodies of the people which you can see have been killed. And there were thousands of these bodies. And usually they didn't have any room in the gas chambers or the crematoriums. So they used to bring out on the field and burn the bodies on the field. The bodies were lying on the fields here and that they burned them.
Were babies successfully hidden in Auschwitz?
There was one or two, actually, were hidden. But you also had a couple, a woman couple with the women. And she was very, very brutal and so on. And sometimes she had a leaning towards a woman and she allowed to hide the child.
So there were babies born at Auschwitz?
Yes, but most of them were gassed and burned. But another occasion, a child, I'm sure there was one or two children which got through the system.
Mr. Hirsch, we've come about 2 miles to Auschwitz 1, which was the first centre, really. What are we going to see here? And it's much busier here. This is the museum, effectively, isn't it?
This is a museum, and schools come, and adults come here, and it's where it says Arbeit macht frei, work makes you free. This sign is on the gate. And when we arrived here, we had to stop because there were 500 American planes flying past, bombers. They were just passing through Auschwitz, and all the guards, our guards, hid.
And what were you doing in the camp? You'd made the right decision. You'd managed to get on the right side of the line. What were they using you for?
I worked on agriculture, ploughing the fields. And for fertilizer, they used to bring us the ashes from the crematorium. And when you just threw it on the floor, you could feel the bones in your hand. I got a job in a place called Budde. It's about 3 miles from here. And I used to work with two horses. And then I worked there for about 4 months. And then I was sent to the fishing commando.
Tell us a little bit about the fishing commando. What did you do down there?
We used to catch fish in the River Vistula. It passes by not very far from Auschwitz here. We used to sort it out on tables, and all alive, and then we used to transport it off to Germany on big tankers.
Did you ever try and steal a fish?
Yes. I had a few times. I got through with a fish into the camp, because they usually used to search you. But about three times I got a fish, and I got it in the camp, and I got some bread for it.
If you had been found with that fish, what would the German guards have done to you?
I don't think they would have hanged me, but they would have given me a good hiding.
Did you see other people get a good hut?
Yeah. Oh, very much. You succeed quite often, without any mercy.
And also, I think if people tried to escape, what action did the Germans take then?
Anybody was caught to escape was brought back. We had to stand around in a square, and they hanged him. And I've seen many, many hangings. Here on the right-hand side was the kitchen. And here was the orchestra. When they marched past from work, out to work, and back to work, from work, the orchestra played here.
Here?
Yeah. Here they sat.
And yet, right opposite, there's a sign there, Mr. Hirsch, that says bodies were often left there, correct, about 30 yards away.
Yeah, when they marched in from work, they left the dead bodies laying there.
There's a square which we're walking into, Mr. Hirsch. What happened here?
Here they used to try some prisoners, some Polish prisoners, and on the right-hand side here, and they used to undress them after they were sentenced to death. They used to undress them and put them against the wall and shot them. And the wall is made of cork because the bullets shouldn't ricochet.
And these two wooden posts we have here, did
hang people with their hands in the back.
And we're going over to the wall, so this is where they would stand people to shoot them.
Yeah. And this is the wall, the cork wall. See? So the bullet didn't ricochet back, because it was a wall, an
yes.
ordinary wall.
So the bullets would just go in and stay?
Yeah.
Where are we now, Mr.?
We're now near gas chamber number one in Auschwitz. And these are the gallows in front of us that Hess was hanged.
He was the camp commander?
He was the camp commander, yes, for about 4 years. And over there, in that house, he lived with the four children, next to the wire.
So he was tried, what, in Krakow?
In Krakow, yes, and he was hanged.
At those gallows over there?
Yes. And they asked him to write his life story. He didn't have no regrets whatsoever. No regrets. He sat there, was writing, but no regrets at all. No remorse or regrets.
So we're actually in a gas chamber now?
That was the first gas chamber in Auschwitz. And they experimented on some Russian prisoners of war, some Poles, and they used to let the gas in here through this opening here.
And are these like scratches that we
Yeah, see? Yeah, the dull sort of
So as things. people died, they're scratching?
Yeah, just cut on the wall.
And how many people will be herded into this fairly, a couple of hundred?
200, yes. And there is, so they had gas masks on, the SS had gas masks on, and they used to let the gas in, and then they moved away.
And it's just scratch marks on so many of the walls.
Yeah, yeah. And inside, they burned the bodies.
We're actually looking now at the ovens.
The ovens, two ovens, yes. And there's two there as well.
And that's they put the body on there and just
yes.
slide it in.
They push the bodies in and they burn them. And that's where they experimented on how to eliminate, how to burn bodies and so on, how to gas them and then burn them. You see the ceiling? So and you get some people from the right wing. They said it never happened. No, it's just a dream.
Conspiracy.
It never happened. No, they should come here and have a look at it, and they would know what had happened.
How important is it to come to Auschwitz or a camp like Auschwitz? How important is it to come to Auschwitz?
Oh, it's very, very important. It's worried me that human beings could do that to other human beings. That's something which is... That was number one. Gosh, I'm the number one.
Avital, come into the conversation. What have you learned as we've walked around these few hours?
How evil it really was. Like, you hear, but when you see it, it's a different feeling.
What's the thing that will stick most from what you've heard? When your grandfather talked about sprinkling the ashes when he was working on the farm side and you could feel the bones, what are some of the things you've heard your granddad say that you'll be thinking about?
Everything. About the prisoners and about how everyone was treated. All of it is equally disgusting.
She's a different generation from you, Mr. Hirsch. What do people like her, what do other generations need to learn? What would you say to your granddaughter now?
I showed her the camp, and I showed her Birkenau, and I showed her where I've been. I was younger than her by about 2.5 years, and I was the lucky one that came out alive of the situation. And
What do this generation and others need to learn then?
Well, I tell them a lot in my life story. I go to schools, universities, and give talks, and also in Betshalom in the Holocaust Museum, and hoping that they learn the lesson that should never happen again, ever.
Do you still have nightmares?
No, not now. I used to have it for about 30 years. I had nightmares. I used to wake up in the middle of the night, and I was scared, and I've seen those terrible things which are happening and so on. But it left me now, and thank goodness, I, in my older age, I seem to be over the situation.
He's an incredible fellow, your
friend. He is. He really is.
Thank you very much.